Hello, and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions about shark movies. I am Noah, and I'm here with my friend and co-host,
Kayla.
And I was going to say we were like Amity Island police officers, but then
no,
I decided not to.
Thank you.
And instead we are...
We could be like fishermen.
We're fishermen. You're wearing a striped shirt right now, which seems kind of like a fisherman kind of thing.
Sure.
Like it could work.
I could be a fisherman.
If you had a life jacket on. Though a real fisherman, you know, they don't need life jackets.
I would wear a life jacket.
Oh, man. Yeah, same. I mean, I can swim, obviously, but... Like, I mean, in Jaws 2, you have his son who gets, like, knocked out. And I'm like, good thing he was wearing a life jacket.
Very true.
That guy, he would have died. Because
some of those other kids were not. So we know Michael and Sean, they were both wearing their life jackets. And even maybe saved Sean, too, and he got thrown off the boat. So
I don't want to give too much credit to Jaws 2 because I don't know if they were thinking this deep. But that might have been, like, a little nod because... You have the iconic scene of Brody wearing a life jacket on the Fisher boat in the original Jaws. And maybe they were like, maybe he passed that on to his sons, you know? Always wear a life jacket when you're out at sea.
Yeah. It seems like something he would do. Wise words from Brody.
That's a little coffee table book we could maybe make. Today we're talking about Jaws.
Obviously.
We're talking about The Meg, classic 2018 shark movie. No.
47 meters down.
Oh my god.
Soul Surfer. What's the one where the girl's stuck on the rock? You know what I'm talking about? There's one where she's like swimming and she gets stuck on the rock and the shark is swimming around the rock that she's stuck on.
Shark Boy and Lava Girl?
No. It's one of those shark thriller ones.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not a shark thriller aficionado. I'm not into the... I mean, I am. Like, I like this movie, but I just never, like, got into the shark thriller thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I like sharks. Did you like sharks a lot when you were growing up?
No, it wasn't really on my list of things that I liked.
I had so many shark things. I love sharks. I used to. I mean, now they're cool, but, like, I had, like, shark books and...
Wow.
Necklaces, and I know. I was a shark guy.
Shark boy?
Shark. I was a shark boy, and you were a lava girl. Let's jump into a little bit. Maybe why we wanted to do this episode, you know, because Jaws is an old movie, and there's not really a Jaws anniversary right now, so we have no excuses. We just wanted to do it.
Yeah, we've talked about Jaws a few times here and there in our summer blockbuster episode.
Top movies episode.
Yeah, summer movie recommendations episode. It comes up a lot. It's
similarly to the shark. It was always lingering, but now we're finally opening up that.
It's coming up to the surface. It's not just peeping its head out. It's not just showing its teeth. It's actually jumping onto the boat.
And we're not just talking about the movie, though. What else are you talking about?
We're also... talking about the book.
This is the best summer episode. We're talking about a book and a summer movie. This is like, imagine this is the end of summer, which it is, and we're on a porch, all two plus whoever's listening of us, and we're just telling you about what we watched and read this summer, and that is Jaws the book and the movie.
Jaws and Jaws.
Jaws and Jaws, and a little bit of Jaws too. So we'll talk about the movie in part two when we get into that, but let's first, you know, get into our first book review of the podcast.
Hello and welcome to book reviews with Sherlock and Watson.
Perfect. We are the best people to talk about books, I think. That's not true. I'm not, at least.
I read a lot of
you
books.
Are, maybe. You do. I mean, we talked about this a little bit because I think I even talked about reading Jaws in one of our episodes when we were just kind of chatting. I don't read a ton during like fall, winter, whatever school time because I'm obviously reading a lot for school. That kind of started in like high school just because you're just reading so much. And so it's like not as fun. But I do try to read a few books in the summer just because, you know, you're sitting around on the beach or the lake or just in your house and you want to read. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I've read a few books and this was one of them. And then I told you I was reading it and you were like, we should do an episode and talk about the book too.
Yeah.
And that's how we got here today.
We're here. We're ready to talk about it.
So this was a book by Peter Benchley in 1974. It came out and it sure is a book from 1974.
Oh,
that's what I'll say. Yeah. After that. I mean, I feel like that's a little offensive to 1974.
Yeah.
Maybe more like 1965.
Yeah.
It feels like
there's a lot of, outdated, for lack of a better word, elements to
racist,
this
sexist,
book. Yeah.
Misogynistic.
Yeah. A lot of just
mean, kind of.
Yeah, a lot of just very unnecessary to the story plot lines and comments and sentences. And then, like, the one that I...
Chapters
and the novels. Majority of the book. No, when I read it, I obviously read, like, a newer version of it that had been reprinted.
Yeah.
I think we read the same version. 2003 or something, and it had some added stuff in it. And as I was reading it, I kind of was like, I get the whole, you know, staying sacred to a work of art and piece of literature. But I was like, some of this stuff could have been trimmed and, like, in the foreword included, like, we understand that some of this language is no go, let's cut it out. Like, I feel like, you know, you can still, because that kind of stuff in this was not fully necessary to, like, the plot and could have been cut out with no hesitation or regard at all to the story.
Yeah, I think it gets forgotten because it's, like, now one of the most popular movies of all time. Not just among, like, fans of just, like, just that like it, you know, but I think it's critically acclaimed as well, the movie. And mm-hmm. so I think it kind of gets forgotten that this is basically just, like, a really pulpy beach read that was meant to be, like, read at the beach and that was it. Like, shoved in your beach bag and, you know, like, you read it while you're, like, half paying attention and half watching your kids, I think. And so it's just, it's funny, not funny maybe, but just, it's definitely, like, throws you off a bit when you start reading. And there are aspects of the book that are well written. I think especially the shark's point of view stuff was really cool because you can't fully get that in a movie.
Yeah.
But it was just definitely like, oh, that's a little interesting that, I don't know, all of the deeper thematic elements of the movie are kind of just thrown out. Or they're there because you've seen the movie, but if you hadn't seen the movie, I don't think they would, like, be obvious to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all the stuff in the book that I really liked was more the, like, actual shark scenes where, like, it was building up the story about the shark. And then kind of all these other sporadic things, I was like, not super into this. Like, let's get back into the water with the shark, you know, attacking people.
Right. And there were some things I liked about, like, because I've said this sometimes before when we talk about Jaws, but I do like the stuff on the island better than the stuff in the boat in the movie.
Yeah, same.
And so I do like how they gave, like, some more backstory on the island. You got to know a couple more characters. It just gave the island a little more life, I think, or maybe not life, because I think it is a little more lifeless because it just seems like such a depressing place to live. But I just liked how maybe it fleshed out a little bit more, because obviously in a movie you can't get all of that. And even just, like, some of the scenes, like, there was one scene in, like, a deli shop that they had just towards an end of a chapter. And it just, I enjoyed having some of that added bonus content, which kind of is, like, my main takeaway, is that this really feels like it was written after the movie as, like, a fan fiction. This it kind of reads like a Jaws fan fiction to me.
Yeah, I really think if the book had cut out the whole plot line with the affair,
because for those who have not read it, there is a not just, like, hinted at, but, like, pretty graphic affair between Mrs. Bro, Brody's
Ellen.
Ellen. Her and then Hooper.
Hooper is very different in the book than in the movie. And I read that he even told Richard to not read the book when he cast him. He was like, I don't want you to read the book because your character is nothing like your character in the book. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to, like,
good call,
have a different idea of him. Which was, like, great because I did not like his character in the book, but I thought that he was great in the movie, so.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah, very, that all could have gone.
Cut the mafia stuff. There's a mafia kind of thing.
The whole plot line with the mayor. Like, I like the idea that he just is a terrible person.
Same. I don't need, like, a reason for why.
Yeah, I don't need it to be like, oh, we feel kind of bad for him because he went got in over his head and
the mafia's
out to get him.
Again, for listeners who haven't read the book, it's like, in the movie, you have the reason that the mayor wants to keep the beaches open is just so they can make money because they're a summer town. And it's pretty, like, I think it's enough of a reason for you to believe it, you know?
Well, yeah, because that kind of stuff happens in real life, like right now with COVID. I mean, we see it enough, is that, like, politicians will always do something different than what actually is in the best interest of the people. So it's like,
yeah, it's definitely enough. And it's the same in the book. So I don't know why they had to, like, add the mafia up thing, because they use the same reason, but it's like, also, it's like kind of like the mafia is like also
real estate.
The mafia is after him too. Yeah. So.
And in the book too, the other thing that they cut out was like the whole reporter storyline, I also thought was a good choice, because I felt like that kind of dragged in the book a little bit.
I don't know if I would say it dragged. That felt to me more like natural book adaptation stuff, where you have, like, the small characters in the movie that are, like, in the movie, but you don't really, they don't have, like, a very big part in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Where you read the book and they just have, like, their character is just a little more fleshed out, because that's just something you can't put into a movie that you want to be just 2 hours long.
Yeah.
So that wasn't, like, it wasn't something I disliked. It would just came across as more regular, like, all right, we're making a movie, let's kind of cut the fat here, where the affair stuff and the mafia stuff felt more like even out of place in the book itself.
Mm, yeah. One thing I liked in the book that I wasn't as impactful in the movie was the scene where Alex's mother is like yelling at him because she's mm-hmm. like, you knew and you killed my son, basically. I liked that better in the book because I felt like it felt more, like she felt more hysterical and that it, like, impacted Brody more. And I felt like in the movie she kind of just was like, you killed my son. And he was like, I'm sorry. And then walked off. And I was like,
well, because I think even she has a little more characterization in the book because you kind of see her inner thoughts, I guess, on the beach, you know? Like, it's not just, you get to know more about her and how she's a single mother and stuff, so I think you just have a little bit more emotional attachment to her character.
Yeah.
What did you think about the I guess the third act of the movie, so like the boat stuff,
because
I think that was like the most direct translation to the movie, where there's obviously the ending is changed, but a lot of it seems like it translated pretty much right from the book to the movie.
Yeah, apart from the, like, dynamic that Hooper had an affair with his wife.
Right, that was just, like, it just, where I feel like there's enough antagonism between Hooper and Quint that they don't really need, like, also there to be the antagonism between Hooper and Brody. Like, I liked in the movie how they have, like, a bit of a bond, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I like their relationships better in the movie and the way that they kind of fluctuate. Yeah, I don't mind it in the book. I think that part was a little more exciting when you get past all that kind of stuff and actually get to when they're trying to kill the shark and keep the shark, you know, from eating them.
Eating them, yeah. I think it is interesting how I think it loses a little bit of agency when you know that they're going back home every day. So yeah. I think in the movie it's a little cooler how they're like just stuck out there and Quint like cuts them off. I just think that is like more cinematic.
Yeah, it feels more, it also feels more dire, you know? Like it feels like they're actually out there to catch the shark, that it's not like, all right, guys, time to get in the boat and go out and get the shark.
Yeah, like who's got their breakfast?
Yeah, it feels more like an adventure film when they're out there the whole time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And definitely the ending, like from Quint's death to the ending of the shark dying, I was just so like, I feel like it wasn't described well what was happening. Like, I still don't really know how the shark died. Like, I know it died by, like, it, like, sunk to the bottom, but it just was very convoluted and weird.
Well, yeah, because it almost made it seem like, I guess, like, they harpooned it enough, but, like, it almost made it seem like the shark drowned, and I was like, is that even possible for a shark to, like, drown? Like, is it just, like, out of energy? Because that feels, feels for as massive as this shark is, like, it feels like it needs an added, you know, being blown up. Like, that's
right.
I mean, like, you build all this suspense, and then it was kind of like it just got sucked down into the abyss. And then Brody's like, oh, wow. I did it. And yeah.
I think it just wasn't as, like, again, cinematic or exciting, because it's like he just stabbed it enough and then it just falls and he's like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe that's why I was having a hard time like reading it or understanding, because maybe I expected it to be a little bit more like climactic, because it felt like it was leading up to this big moment and then it kind of just happened and then
the whole book leads up to killing the shark, and then the shark I mean, that's what it is. It's a very anticlimactic way to kill the shark.
Yeah, so this book, though, was pretty big. It sold a lot. And I think it makes sense, because I don't think a lot of the things that are problematic now, I don't think people thought were as problematic in 1974, you know?
Yeah, this book would never sell now.
No. But when you like look past that, it is a very like readable, like throwaway novel.
Yeah, I mean, I read it in basically one sitting.
Right. And I think so it makes sense to me why it would sell, especially like it was like a big summer thing, and they kind of timed the paperback with the marketing of the movie. And so it does make sense to me why it was so big. Do you want to kind of get a little bit into maybe like the history of the book and then into how the movie was made from the book? Because you have some stuff written here.
Yes, I would love to.
Wow. History time.
So he wrote Jaws because of his own interest in sharks, shark attacks, and sharks off of Montauk, specifically from Frank Mundus, who is a big ocean game hunter and like hunted sharks in the Montauk area. So that was kind of based on him. And it's funny because apparently Mundus and Peter Benchley, like, later in their lives, both became shark conservationists. So both the shark hunter and the person who wrote about shark hunts.
Wow. How the tables have turned.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting.
They did turn, I guess.
But Richard Zanuck and David Brown, who were producers at Universal, heard about the book before it was released. One of them, their wife worked at like a magazine, and it was like one of those blurbs that like a critic did, and he read the blurb, and the blurb said like, this should be made into a movie or something. And so he got his hands on it. They both read it and decided it needed to be made into a movie. It's funny, though, because they later said that if they had read it a second time, like, that they wouldn't have done it, which is so funny to me.
Because it's, like, impossible, like, in their minds, especially then, it's like, how are they going to make the movie?
Yeah, like, so, like, you know, you just are like, oh, man, this is so exciting, let's buy the rights, let's make a movie, without thinking about it.
It's kind of funny, because that would never happen today, because there's so many, like, checks and balances in Hollywood now, and like calculated risks sort of thing.
Well, and they couldn't just be like, okay, let's just willy-nilly buy the rights to this book for $175,000, which is $990,000 today. Mm-hmm. Like,
which in the grand scheme of what Jaws made is not a lot, but at the time it was a lot.
Yeah. And for a book that like hadn't even come out yet, they didn't even know. I mean, that happens a lot, but like they didn't know what kind of success it would bring.
It was his first book too. Like, it wasn't like he was an established author.
Yeah. So they were originally going to have Dick Richards on board as director. He later did Tootsie, which is pretty much the only movie he's known for. But he had just done a feature film, and then apparently when they were in pre-production, he kept describing the shark as a whale. And so they were like, you gotta go, because you're not taking the shark seriously enough. So Spielberg, young and fun and excited and ambitious for Hollywood, he had directed Duel already for Universal, and then The Sugarland Express for specifically Zanuck and Brown. That hadn't even come out, so like he wasn't established either. And so,
no, yeah, for sure. He did a lot of TV stuff.
But yeah, I think Duel was a TV movie. I could be wrong.
It was. Yeah, Sugarland Express was his first theatrical movie.
He had seen the book on their desk when he was in a meeting, and he asked if he could read it. And so he read it, and then he was like, oh my gosh, I need to direct this. So he like talked him into it. And then later when they started working on it, he was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore because I don't want to be typecast as this like adventure director who's making like shark and truck movies. And
shark and truck movies, my favorite genre.
And they were like, nope. And so they didn't let him go based on whatever his contract was, which I'm sure he was grateful for, you know, at the end.
Well, maybe not during production, but like, way after production.
Yeah. So one interesting thing I read about it, which is very typical Hollywood, was that they wanted to shoot it to finish by the end of June of that year, 74, when the major studio's contract with SAG was due to expire, to avoid any disruptions due to a potential strike. And I was like, that is the most Hollywood thing I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
To be like, oh gosh, there might be a strike, so like we have to finish this before the union is disbanded. I don't know. It's just kind of funny.
Right.
But they were originally given a budget of $3.5 million, which pretty much doubled, and a shooting schedule of 55 days, but they ended up shooting like way longer than that too.
10 months, baby.
Yeah, so
And Spielberg never left the island either. Like, they had 6-day work days, but he never left. So he was on the island for 10 months.
Wow. Well, good for him.
Did he ever go back is the real question. Like, was he like, you know, Martha's Vineyard, great place for a vacay.
It's nice.
It is.
So about the book, he wanted to entirely change the first two acts of the book when translated to the movie, but keep the third act with the shark hunt on the
kind of like we said
orca with Hooper and Quint and Brody, which I think was one of the best decisions that he could have made, just in the way that it translates to film. So he Benchley wrote the first three drafts of the screenplay, actually. They asked him to do that. And then they passed it on to other writers to basically rewrite it, essentially, is what happened. Right. Benchley even said, though, that like he didn't understand how to write a screenplay. He didn't know how to translate his characters to a screenplay. So some of the plot lines were removed. Obviously, we mentioned the affair, the mayor's life and the mafia, the shark's death, the reporter storyline. A lot of that was just kind of nixed in the movie. And then Spielberg also didn't like the characters, obviously, that Benchley wrote in the script, because like Benchley said, it was hard to write them.
Well, also the characters in the book are just awful characters. We didn't even mention this, but in the book, they're like the worst. They're
none
just
none of
not
them are likable. You don't root for any of them. Like, you're not thinking, oh my gosh, I hope Brody kills the shark. Like, he's kind of bad in the book too, and so you're like, I don't know, you don't ever really feel like he's actually doing what's right for the people, whereas in the movie you kind of feel like he's like actually trying his best. But they hired Carl Carl G. Carl G. who ended up playing the newspaper reporter in the movie, was offered a small role. Any role of his choosing, actually, is what
I read. What was funny is I watched two documentaries for this podcast, and he was in both of them. And he was apparently, like, obviously the newspaper reporter is a bigger role in the book. And so he said it was kind of, like, funny because as he was doing rewrites, he kept, like, making his own role smaller and smaller.
That's funny.
Because, like, it's just he picked the role and then he realized, like, actually this role doesn't need to be in this movie anymore.
Yeah. So he essentially rewrote the script while they were shooting the movie. So they would pretty much finish the next day's scene the night before they were going to shoot it. And they would have these cast and crew meals together, I guess, and talk about it while they were eating dinner. And the actors would just kind of improvise lines, and then they would throw those in, or they would improvise lines on the set, and they would put those in, and that ended up in the movie. So it seemed like a very chaotic, but sort of collaborative effort. There's definitely, I was reading some stuff about how different people wanted to be credited for different things, and someone would be like, I was the one who came up with the speech Quint did, and then someone else was like, he literally, like, didn't come up with any of that, and so it just seemed like a whole thing.
Right, I think the speech, the Quint speech, was three separate writers. I forgot the first two, so apologies to them, but there was, like, one write of it that was, like, come up with the idea, and then one guy wrote it as 9 pages, and then they gave it to Robert Shaw, who was like a playwright in by him himself, and then he pared it down to what is in the movie. So it was like very multiple rights, which I think is how the whole script was.
Yeah, you know,
like just multiple people kind of like taking the pass at it.
Yeah, but I don't remember which one. One of them said later that one of them really was the only one that did it, and then
yeah, I think Robert Shaw said he improvised it, like. Yeah.
So it's just funny to see, like, how it all ended up coming together and, like, actually making a good movie. You know, one of the greatest movies of all time, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, the production was so, it was, like, awful. I mean, 10 months. I mean, you're on the ocean and you set up your shot.
Well, and Spielberg didn't even really go out on the ocean with the crew when they were, like, shooting stuff on boats for some of them. And so they would say that, like, the crew would come back and be, like, upset and sunburnt and had been on the water all day. And it seems like just pure chaos, basically.
Yeah. Well, one thing I heard what they said was, like, if a ship came in the back, because they wanted to shoot it where, like, they couldn't see any land around them, which I think was a good choice. But if a ship came, like, behind them, they would have to wait like 2 hours before they could shoot again for the ship to pass. And they would do the math like, well, it'll take like an hour and 45 minutes to set up the shot again, or it will take an hour and 30 minutes for the ship to pass. So we just have to hope the ship passes and that another ship doesn't come. So it's like just things like that that they can't control, which I think now, like, I think this is one of like the first and last movies to be shot on the ocean. Like after this, people were like, let's just do lakes or tanks or something else.
Yeah. And some of the stuff, like the shot of the other fisherman's body that Hooper goes down and sees in the boat, that was shot in a tank.
Yeah, in a pool. Yeah,
pool. They did that like after, I guess, because Spielberg wanted another jump scare after the test screenings.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. I mean, you wouldn't even have noticed, like, the difference between, you know, whatever, but...
Right, yeah, it's like, when I was watching this time, I knew that was the case, like, that, I think they shot they shot that scene, but it wasn't as a jump scare, I think the body, the head was just there, and so I was watching, like, to see if I could notice the difference between the ocean, and then the pool, and I didn't, like, it looks exactly the same, so... I'm sure they did that and they're like, man, we could have just done this whole thing on the pool. And
yeah,
it been
I know
fine.
Some, like, someone on the crew was, like, watching it, like,
yeah. Well, and I mean, I don't know if this was the case, but I think with the long shoot, it became, like, obviously a huge marketing thing because this was one of the first movies that was marketed, like, while it was being filmed. And that, I think, might have contributed to the success it became because it was such like a big deal how long it was shooting and that they were taking a chance on a new director, because again this was like a huge book.
Yeah.
And so people knew that the movie was coming out, so maybe if they hadn't gone through all of that it wouldn't have been as successful. Who knows?
You never
can tell.
I mean, I think all the stuff like on the ocean looks really good, you know.
Yeah, I agree. And it doesn't seem like thrown together either. Like, it seems all pretty seamless. Like, you don't, I think a lot of times in when you know something is a strained production, you can look and see the tension or how mm-hmm. things don't look at, like, what's the word I'm looking for? The continuity, even between, like, tones isn't there. But you don't really see that at all. It's like, it all fits together really well. So they definitely, they got it done, you know? And that's all you got to do at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And well, to get the movie anyway. They did it. Anything else you want to say, like, about production before we get into the movie itself? Any other facts you want to share?
No, if I think of any while we're talking, I'll pull them out, but you know.
Right. So let's go to a quick ad break, and when we come back, we will jump into our full discussion on the indie hit Jaws from 1975.
By indie director Steven Spielberg. And we're back.
Dun dun. Dun dun. That's the ominous sound of our review, like, coming up, you know.
Yeah.
If for some reason you haven't seen this movie in a while, you haven't seen it at all, you just want a quick refresher, we have a quick summary here. Did you write this summary?
I did, yeah.
Wow, the return. Oh my goodness.
I decided it was finally time to make my comeback and start writing the summaries again so we don't have to pull them from Google anymore.
Thank you, Google, for your services, but you'll no longer be required. Okay, I'll read this then.
Yeah, go ahead. Since you probably, have you read it yet?
I skimmed okay. it. Okay. I didn't read
great,
it really all.
Great, great, great.
It's summer on Amity Island, and the crowds are rolling in leading up to the biggest weekend of the year, the 4th of July. Before many people get out on the beach, Chief Brody discovers there has been a shark attack, and a young woman is dead. Despite Brody's protests, the mayor forces the beaches open, which leads to a shark feast. The body count is adding up, and the shark still swims on. Will Chief Brody be able to hunt down the shark and wreak vengeance on the beast that haunts Amity Island? Or will he himself become a full course meal for Jaws?
Wow.
Beautiful.
It's very good.
Beautiful.
I was really proud of it.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Or a full course meal for Bruce, you know, because that's what they called the shark.
So yeah.
Who knows? I think, like, calling the shark Jaws just never worked for me. I've heard people that are like, yeah, look at Jaws go. I'm like, what? That doesn't really work as a name.
Yeah.
Like, so I never really... like, have a name for just the shark. I just kind of like, it's just the shark, you
shark
know.
Shark guy.
So what's your history with this movie? Your background on this one?
Yeah, so we watched this surprisingly as kids. I don't know how old I was when I watched this the first time. Maybe 10, 11, which is like crazy because we were not allowed to watch movies like this at all.
It's an old movie. They can't, how bad can they be?
I think we watched it on TV, because it was like on, which probably was how we got away with it, was it was like, oh, we loved this movie when we were kids and here, let's watch it with our kids and they forget things right. about it, you know? We had, my dad's cousin was an extra in the movie. Anytime we had it on, he would be like, oh, there they are on the beach. And it's like,
there was a lot of islanders.
And it's like the back
the
of
movie.
Their head, basically. I wish my dad had been in the movie. If they had been in Martha's Vineyard at the time, they probably...
He could have been.
He could have been. He would have been...
I mean, they were just doing open casting calls.
I know. He would have been 10 at the time, so he could have been in it.
He could have been, like, on the beach, you know, as one of the kids in the water.
What a missed
opportunity.
Yeah, my grandparents had a house on Martha's Vineyard. It's kind of funny because, like, they actually, my great-grandparent, they had a hotel and restaurant on the island. But my grandparents had a house, and they got to name one of the streets because they were one of the first houses on that street. So even though we don't have the house in the family anymore, the street name remains the same.
Wow.
Wow.
What's the name of the street?
Halliday Place, Holiday Lane.
Kind of sounds like a Hallmark movie. Yeah.
Hey, you know?
You know? I think it could be.
Runs in the Family.
Maybe that's... It runs in the Family. No,
but when we had visited Martha's Vineyard as kids, you know, we would drive over the bridge and be like, oh, this is the bridge where, you know, the shark came in this shallow area and almost killed Michael. And, you know, when we would go, I would always, like, secretly hope that we would see a shark when we would, like, go into the water.
Right,
it would be like,
of course.
Maybe the shark is here. Obviously.
I wonder how Martha's Vineyard, like, the people that own it feel about that, you know? Like it's Martha's Vineyard, but now their biggest thing is known for a shark movie.
Yeah,
you know?
You wonder. I think they do a lot of Shark Week stuff there too now. So,
of course, yeah.
Like on the actual Shark Week, but yeah, it was always funny as a kid to, we weren't old. A lot of people jump off of that bridge and swim, and we weren't really old enough to really jump off the bridge and swim. But it would be kind of cool to like go back and swim there.
Jump
and
off
be
the
like,
bridge.
Just like all the tourists, you know, probably do.
I'm sure there's like 15 people in that water all the time, just like a consistent number. Yeah. So I didn't watch this when I was 10. I don't know when I first watched it. Maybe I was like 15. I watched it then, and I liked it a lot. I mean, I wasn't like, I don't know how into movies I was when I watched this. This was like still just kind of like watching it for fun, you know, because it's like a big movie and it was, was it summer? I don't know. It might've been summer. Not sure. But then I've watched it obviously since then and love it and love like watching videos about it or reading stuff about it. Cause like there's so much information on the production and how it like influential it's been in both like the way the movie was marketed and just the way the movie was made and the movie itself and summer blockbusters. Like there's a lot of things you can kind of tie back to it. So it's almost like a, I don't know what the word would be, but it really connects to a lot of different things in the film world. So it could have maybe been for me, like almost a jumping off point because you can look at it from like the commercial point of view, but you can also look at it like, how did this influence everything going forward? And that's like my cup of tea. You know, I like that dual purpose kind of stuff or examining things from a lot of different lenses. I watched this last year once when obviously I hadn't been going to movie theaters at all. And it was at the drive-in with Jurassic Park.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Really? One of the best like moments of my life is seeing Jurassic Park and Jaws as a double feature. Yeah, it was great.
It would be fun to watch, to be, okay, I don't think it would be fun to be on a boat, but I think the idea of watching Jaws while you're on a boat in the ocean would be very thrilling.
Here, I have a little story. We, not on a boat, so some of our friends have, like, a pool, and we were like, let's watch Jaws in the pool. So we set up like this big blow up screen and it definitely like we probably could have died from like electricity because like there was a lot of wires near the pool, but we set up a blow up screen and we projected it and there was so many bugs. I think we only watched like 20 minutes, but it was still pretty cool to watch like the opening scene, you know, on a raft.
Well,
in the pool.
Let me tell you my pool shark story. When I worked a VBS once.
great start.
We were staying, like we went to go help somewhere. So we were staying at this person's house that had a pool. And one of the nights we watched Soul Surfer, which is a religious shark movie.
On par with Jaws, one might say.
Yeah, and we laid on rafts in the pool, and we projected it up on like the garage wall that was like right up by the pool. So we had similar experiences, but also very different.
That's funny. Yeah, I think I've even read about people watching this like on a lake, you know, in like tubes, which. Even though it's a lake, I don't know if I could do, you know, it's dark outside. It's like, there's still stuff in a lake. There's still animals.
Yeah, fish.
So, you know, a fish might rub against you and then I'm going to fall over and then I'm just going to be wet Yeah, not happening. But it's a cool idea. So, yeah, I don't know if, like, there's much else about the history with it. Like, I don't really have many other, like, stories. It's just, like, you know, always liked it. So, that's pretty much it.
Wow. Podcast over.
When was the last time you watched it before you watched it
this time? I can't even remember. High school, maybe. Wow. It's been a really long time.
So, it's been a while for you then.
Yeah. It's really interesting that it didn't have, like, a lasting impact on me as a kid.
Well, because you were so, like, scared of other horror things.
Yeah,
like,
I know. So, I don't know if, like, if we watched a TV version, if, like, some of the blood was cut out.
Huh. Even when you were a teenager, you would have watched a TV version?
I don't know. I can't remember. My brain doesn't, the memory is just gone. No memory bank.
It's gone. It left.
But compared to things that I was, like, terrorized by as a kid, like Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet the Wolfman, like, it's amazing that this movie didn't, like, terrorize my dreams, you know?
Well, I think that's a good jumping in point, because it's like, this movie has definitely changed, not in its reputation, but I think in the way people view the movie since it came out, because obviously when it came out, I mean, there's videos of it, there's like records of it. I mean, people talk about all the time how terrifying it was, like one of the scariest movies that had ever been made at that time, besides like The Exorcist, like one of the scariest, it's PG, so one of the scariest movies for like a wider audience, and it was like a horror movie. But I think watching it now with all the things that have been in movies since then, and just, like, obviously, too, how some of the special effects have aged. It's much less a horror movie and more of, like, a thriller, even, like, just adventure movie.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, too, because it's been watched so much and everyone knows, like, every scene by heart, it's lost a lot of its scariness. So it's just interesting now how it's not really viewed as a horror movie anymore.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, obviously The Exorcist is still viewed as a horror movie. But it's similar to some of the things we talked about when we did our Exorcist episode, is that, like, both of them were such pioneers in that type of genre that it's, like, now everything else has been taken from that and made so much bigger, and special effects have, you know, changed so much that it's, like, hard now to look at stuff like this and be spooked by it. At least that was how I felt with The Exorcist, too. Like, you can still have jump scares and you can still be like, oh, this scene is definitely tense, or, you know, I'm worried about what's going to happen and, oh gosh, you know, he's going to be eaten. But it definitely doesn't carry the same weight as it might have, like, watching it in the theater when it first came out.
Yeah, I think the tense word is a great one to use, like you said, because it's like, I think it is still gripping. Like, the pace is really good and it keeps you engaged. And I always jump at, like, the when the head floats out of the boat. Because, like, for some reason, like, something with the timing of that jump scare just always works for me.
Mm-hmm.
So there are moments that, like, I think it's definitely, like, a more tense movie.
Yeah.
But it's not, maybe even, like, on par with something like Jurassic Park, which, again, to me, isn't really a horror movie as much as it more is just, like, an adventure kind of, like, not thriller in the sense of, like, a slasher kind of movie, but it has thriller elements and tense scenes where you're kind of, like, the characters are in danger and you want them to be safe and all that good stuff
movies. Especially the way it builds the tension, like, in the whole first act of the movie. And, you know, you're watching these shark attacks happen, and then they, like, juxtapose that with all the people coming in off the ferry, and you're like,
oh, so good.
It builds the tension so much. Like, all you're doing is watching people come off of the ferry, but because they've already established how dangerous and ominous the shark is, it's like, oh gosh, any of these people could be the next victim.
So you have, like, the first obvious iconic, like, kill in the water, the girl getting eaten at night, and then I think that's just, like, a great way to open the movie. And I think it's really, I mean, they've talked about how great it was that the shark didn't really work very well, the mechanical shark, because it forced them to be, like, more of, like, a Hitchcockian kind of movie where they don't show the shark at all. And I think it's like, if you watch the movie and you're just watching, like, okay, when, how much do they actually show the shark? They don't really show the shark that much, but I think you kind of fill the shark in your mind. And so, like, even in that opening scene when the girl is being eaten and you kind of see the shark, you see it from the shark's point of view underwater, I think you're visualizing the shark in your head. So they don't need to show the shark because they've already kind of, with the music and with just the way it's shot, put that image in your mind already. And I think, yeah, it's just a great way to open the movie because it sets up the stakes, it sets up the theme, which is really important because that theme is meant to, like, then signal when danger is around. And then it also kind of just gives a really nice, a really good jumping off board for everything, because then they are allowed to do a little bit more exposition in the, when it gets to morning time with Chief Brody. You see him at his house, and some movies like this, I think, just jump right into exposition, you know? And I think that gives, like, a really great sense of urgency, that opening scene.
Yeah, I agree.
What's one of your favorite scenes in this one? Like, or sections?
I mean, there's a lot of set pieces I like. I like when, obviously, the, like, whole false alarm scene of the kids. And then, but you're like, but we saw the shark, so it's there. So,
it's there somewhere.
We know that it's there, but, like, danger. And then when the girl starts screaming, and then everyone's like running. And then you're also kind of at that point, I think it raises the stakes because you are familiar. Everyone up to any of the other victims have just been people we don't know. But then you've already established a relationship with Brody. And you're like, oh my gosh, his kid is in the pond. And so I think that kind of even raises the stakes in that scene where you're like, wow, they're so good at making tension, because then you're like,
yeah,
not Brody's kid. Like, it could be any of the other kids, but not his kid. Like, come on.
Right, well, because there's, like, millions of people in the water that, like, you don't not care about, but also you don't have any attachment to.
Yeah.
And so... I think you're able to get, like, that big, like, group scene, which it's like, that's, like, a great, that the shooting, the cinematography in that scene is so good. Yeah. Like, how they make it feel so claustrophobic.
Yeah, like, you're there panicking with them.
Right. I remember the first time you see that, you think that they are actually being attacked by a shark.
Well, yeah, and you don't even know. You're like, oh my gosh, where is it? Who's it eating? Like, who's it gonna get?
Yeah, and it could be eating anyone because you can't really see. That's the point. Yeah, it's really, really great. Another example of how they build attention is in my favorite scene, which is the beach scene when the boy dies. That's one of my, probably, like, my top five favorite scenes in a movie. I really, it's just set up so well, again, with the building the tension, because the way the camera moves in this movie is so amazing.
Uh-huh.
And how you have, like, it following the dog, and then you have it following the lady, and then it moves back, and, like, it keeps moving, and you know that something's gonna happen, but you just don't know who's it gonna happen to, and when is it gonna happen. And then you have it going back and forth between Brody looking at the water, and then, like, you have the people walk across, and it swipes to the people in the water.
Well, yeah, and you're even like, oh my gosh, maybe it's okay, like, it's gonna be a false alarm, the kid's gonna be fine. And then that's when the guy's like, Where's my dog? And he's, like, calling for his dog, and you're like, oh no, not the dog.
Well, and then, again, the first time you see it, I don't think you expect them to kill the kid, like, on a raft, you know?
Yeah, right.
And then you have that dolly zoom, which is, like, now the best thing, like, ever. And yeah, that whole scene is just so, again, does a great job of raising the stakes even further, because we had really basically nameless person in the opening scene. And then you bring that on to now, it's not a nameless person, but it's not someone we have a big attachment to, but it's also a kid and a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, like, a little bit, draws a little bit more emotion from the audience. And then you have the scene where it's actually his son in danger. And that's kind of what finally gets them to go on the big mission.
Yeah.
To finally kill that little shark.
The shark hunt.
Dun-dun-dun. Yeah, with the boat scenes, I mean, yeah, like, the whole third act, basically. Like I said, I definitely prefer the island stuff, not because, like, the boat stuff is necessarily bad. If anything, I would say the only issue I have with the boat scene, as in, like, just the placement, is that It feels too long for a third act, but it doesn't feel long enough to be like one of those movies where the first half is this and then the second half is this.
Yeah.
Like, the length feels just a little bit off, where it feels like there should be either a little bit more or a little bit less, which would be like basically my only complaint about the movie. But it's not really a complaint. It's not enough of a complaint to really like make me lower the rating at all. It's just something that is basically the only thing I notice in the pacing of the movie that feels like a little bit of a hiccup.
Yeah, because I think for me, that's when it kind of gets into movies that, like, the territory of movies that aren't really my kind of movie, you know? Like, going after the beast and hunting it and all that. So I think that section, while it's still good, the pacing of it for me, it's just, like, not my thing as much. So I think, and it's, I mean, it's definitely not that I don't like that part, but just in comparison with the other parts, I think that part for me isn't as interesting until they're actually, like, basically killing the shark, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, I agree it's definitely not my kind of thing either in a movie. The only reason I think I can watch it and stay engaged is because it's, again, the third act of the movie. And you have already established the relationship of at least two of these characters.
Yeah.
And then you have this third character who is very, like, mysterious and is one of those characters where you just want to spend more time with because you just want to kind of know more about him because he's, like, such a mystery.
Yeah.
And so because you have the relationship dynamics, which I think work really well, and also, like, that one scene, which I don't think people really make time for anymore, which is the scene in the bottom of the ship, the hull, the terminology
right.
is.
Hull sounds right.
Right, yeah, they're talking, they're joking around, then you have them singing, and then you have the Indianapolis speech. Again, I don't think movies really do that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if they really, like, I'm not to be sound pretentious, but, like, I don't know if maybe directors are fully aware that, like, in order to get the big, intense, thrilling moments, you need to have those quieter moments to kind of build up to it. And I think because of all those things, like, it makes it not my favorite part of the movie, but it makes it something that I can still enjoy because, like, it's basically like the best version of that kind of story.
Yeah.
I even think, like, I know that people have said the shark doesn't look very good. I mean, obviously the shark is not aged well, but I think it looks fine. Like, cause it's, again, it's not in the movie too much, and when it is in the movie the most, it's when you're already, it's in the very most intense scenes, and so you're so into what's going on, I don't think it matters.
I don't think it matters either. I think it would be worse if it, like, actually was, like, CGI, looked like a real shark.
Agree.
Like, it would cheapen
it. Even
if
it was made today.
Yeah, I think it serves its purpose very well. And then even, like, some of the shots, like, they did film real sharks, so...
Right.
It's, like, that, I think, the stuff where it comes onto the boat, it looks real enough that, like, it really doesn't matter. I think when it's obviously swimming in the water and attacking the cage, it's, like, you got the real shark, so...
Right.
I think, you know, in that scene, it works, and then when they use the animatronic, I think that works great, so...
Right, exactly. And, like, by the time you get to that point, like I said, it's like you're already in. Again, and that's another thing where with the ending, where, I mean, I'm not going to say obviously because I didn't know this before when I first saw the movie, but air tanks don't explode really like that. You can't shoot an air tank and just have it, like, explode.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one, like, not issue. I mean, issue that the author had with it was, like, this is kind of not a good ending because it's not realistic, but... What Spielberg said, and what I definitely agree with, is, like, once you are at that point, you already have the audience.
Yeah.
Like, if the audience is in, if they're not in at that point, then nothing you're going to do is going to, like, if it's a realistic ending, it doesn't matter. So,
okay, like, is it realistic, though, to have a 25-foot shark, like, jumping onto their boat? Like,
I think you're
already past the, like, disbelief, so...
Yeah, and even, like, stuff like the territoriality things, which have, like, basically all the shark theory stuff is, like, not true, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't care, because, like, it sounds like they know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
so,
I'm
like,
not a shark
when am I
expert.
Ever going to know? When am I going to need shark facts in my life? You know, I'm not going to be like on a boat like, guys, let's throw an air tank in the shark's mouth and blow it up just like a Jaws. Like, that's not...
Right. You're not going to find yourself in that situation to be like, yeah. Yeah, and I think, too, that's something that is the, like, whole effects and all that is talked about a lot between Jurassic Park and, like, the new Jurassic movies that have been made, is that all the new dinosaurs are CGI, obviously, and a lot of the ones in Jurassic Park were animatronics.
Yeah, at least, like, the ones that were front on screen.
Yeah, and they feel scarier, I think, the real ones. And I think
also the filmmaking is just better, too.
Yes, I mean,
it's just way better.
Yeah, but I think the same stands for Jaws and can be said for that, is that I think it would ruin the movie to not have these kind of things and decisions that they chose to make. Like, if they were like, oh, if we remade it, we would have to do an accurate ending and they couldn't kill the shark with this air tank and explode it. Like, I think you kind of, you know, have to do it. And, like, if it exploded, would all those guts explode everywhere? Probably not.
No, but it's so satisfying. It's the most satisfying ending of, like,
it would probably just blow into a couple different pieces. Like,
yeah,
it wouldn't just completely vaporize this 25-foot shark, but it does, and it's great. So, who cares?
Yeah, it's just, like, this movie, even though there are obviously elements where it's intense, it's, like, the most, like, it just makes me happy to watch.
Uh-huh.
It flies by, and there are certain movies where you just feel, like, safe in the, like, the hands of the director. Mm-hmm. Like, you know that the director isn't going to, like...
I thought for a second that you were
going
to say you feel safe when you watch it, and I was like, I don't know if
no,
Jaws
I don't feel safe.
Is that movie. No. Like...
No, I meant I feel, like, safe in trusting
that
the story is not going to, like, make a turn and just mess everything up.
Yeah, like, you can trust that it'll be good... You know, and it'll turn out, you know, not
and it,
have
like it will make sense.
A terrible ending. Yeah, Spielberg is definitely one of those people. I mean,
I think less so now, but definitely there are movies where
he's got a few misses.
Like
but for the most part, I was looking through his filmography, and being like,
it's wild.
Yeah, being like, wow, I love a lot of Spielberg movies, but then there's also a lot that just are not good, and, you know? No,
yeah, yeah. But, like, when you've made Jaws and Jurassic Park and E.T. and a million other movies,
Indiana
like, who
Jones.
Cares, you know? You know, you can do whatever you want, man. I don't really care. Just make your West Side Story remake, and hopefully you smile a little bit and you are happy.
Yeah,
and that's
if
all
he
that you need.
Is loving it, good for him.
He just always seems like, every interview with him seems, he's like, so nice.
I mean, he obviously still loves what he originally set out to do and is just vibing and enjoying his career.
Steven Spielberg is just vibing.
And I'm very happy for him. I'm like, you go.
I hope he hasn't watched any of the Jurassic World movies. I hope he's just, like, steered clear of those.
Yeah, I feel like that would be very disappointing for him.
Yeah, I don't think he needs to see those.
Is this your favorite Spielberg... I mean, okay, sorry. This is your favorite Spielberg film, right?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen all of them.
Yeah.
So I can't, like, perfectly say, but I do think this is, like, the best, which is funny because this is only a second feature-length film, but of, like, I mean, I've seen most of the big ones, at least bigger, like, blockbuster ones, and of those, I think, like, this and then Jurassic Park 2 in some ways, but I think especially this is the best blend of everything he does well, and nothing is, like, overdone, where I think, like, E.T. or something, sometimes they overdo, like, the melodramatic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just think they over, sometimes, like, he can lean too heavily in some directions.
Yeah.
But in this, you have, like, little pieces of everything he does really well, and nothing, like, overstays its welcome. Like, I think the only, like, melodramatic thing I guess you would have is, like, when they're at the table and he's doing the faces with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, all you need of that kind of thing, you know? You have that little moment, and then it's just, like, part of the recipe.
Yeah.
Wow. And now it's in there. But I don't need to be beaten over the head with, like, the E.T. theme while the kid cries and like reaches towards the sky. I'm sorry, but not.
We should do we should do a top five Spielberg movies episode eventually.
I need to watch a few more, but I've seen a lot.
I've seen probably over half of it. Half of his filmography.
Can you believe he made Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year?
That's insane. He's insane.
What a year. What a year. And he probably was easier than making Jaws. He'll probably would say that.
Yeah. I read that he isn't there for the final scenes of the movies that he makes after this movie.
Yeah, well, he heard that the crew was going to like throw him overboard or like do something with him after the movie was ended. So he wasn't there for the wrap or the final scene of this movie.
Yeah, and then... Yeah, so that's now his tradition, which I think is kind of fun.
That is fun. That's like such an extra thing.
He seems like a very quirky guy. Like, at this point, it's like, gosh, sorry, I can't come to the final scene of the BFG. Like, man.
It's like, why? Well, there's one time in Jaws I couldn't do it, and now I just don't do it anymore.
Final
like...
scene of Tintin, can't do it.
It's like, bro, we're just animating this last thing. Like, sorry guys, gotta run. It's like a superstitious kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah,
at this point,
maybe. Who knows? Or maybe it's just too. He's done it too long now. There's no going back at this point.
He doesn't know what it feels like. He doesn't know how to say goodbye. Maybe he's just bad at goodbyes.
Yeah,
you know?
He just has to walk out of the room.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to say about Jaws, but like, also, I feel like everything that. There is to say has been said. It's not like something that we're like going to be adding to the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything like you want to kind of close on, any final thoughts you wanted to share that you didn't get to share?
I don't think so.
Well, all I'll say is I would just watch Jaws 2 just for some great outfits by Chief Brody. He really stepped up his game.
A cop. That makes me so mad.
But here's the thing. It's like, I feel like at least the first movie is kind of like almost about police corruption.
Yeah.
Or like how the government
manipulates
the police, because in the end, he's really not acting. I mean, he is, but it's almost like he's not really acting in the governmental establishment anymore. So even though he is, like, I think it could almost be almost like metaphorically, like, he was, and then he saw like how, like, I mean, he's forced to put people in danger because the mayor said so.
Yeah.
And so then he's like, no, I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna blow up a shark.
Well, and then the second one, he's not the chief of police because he stood up against them. He stood up against the tyrannical government.
He also shot a gun in like a crowd of people on a beach. So, I mean, a couple misjudgments by him.
Yeah,
but
he does look very good though in both movies. I think he
just an icon. He is
that black turtleneck.
Ooh, yeah, in the hull of the ship.
Yeah, he's wearing the black turtleneck, and it's like, wow, okay, Chief Brody, I see you in that turtleneck. And then he's wearing those...
I
want to
see, like, him unpack, like, what did he pack for this trip?
And then he's wearing those short shorts in the second movie with the little sneakers, and I was like, all right, pop off! And then the sleeves
Chief
of
Brody.
His shirt, like, you can see his arm muscles. I was like, wow, we stand.
Much better than his deputy, who is very annoying, especially in the second one.
Yeah.
Not a fan. He's a cop. I will consider
him
a cop.
Because he's very much like, I'll do what they say.
Chief Brody is like, he doesn't play by the rules, man.
He's
going to do
for
what
the
people want.
He's for the people, and he's for his sons.
Chief Brody, for the people.
He cares about his sons and his wife. That man just needs to get off of Amity Island. Like...
No, he does.
He needs to retire. He needs to go somewhere else. Maybe get a desk job.
Maybe he'll be like a private investigator.
Yeah.
I think.
Or
he can do
a shark hunter, you know?
Or a shark hunter.
He could become a fisherman at this point.
He goes out, like, brings some air tanks. They're like, what the hell are you doing, man? What are you going to do with these air tanks? Like, I'm just going to blow them up with my gun.
Yeah, throw some dynamite in the water, man.
Man, I do like how the second one, he's like, I saw a shark, so now I am an expert on sharks.
Yeah, he's like, I know what that is. don't you see his eye? That's the eye. It's like, dude, this doesn't look like a freaking shark at all.
It doesn't look like a shark.
I thought in that moment when the photo was going to develop, we were going to see, like, the shark. And then it was like this. And I was like, we're building all this suspense for nothing. Like, you can't even tell what it is.
Imagine if Jaws 2 was really just about Chief Brody's, like having panic attacks and, like, hallucinating after, like, his trauma of the hunt.
I think that would be better than Jaws 2 was. Like, just, maybe we should write a Chief Brody movie.
Well, maybe you could say he got kicked off the force.
No, he quit.
Okay, he quit. And then he got really drunk at that one time, right? And so everything after him getting drunk is just, like, his hallucinations.
Yeah,
you know?
Wow. That could be a horror movie on its own.
Because, like, it's pretty fantastical with, like, the shark biting the electricity cord. And you could just say that that's all, like, in his head, you know?
Yeah, and just really terrible foreshadowing, too, where they're like, what? We just pulled up an electrical cable off the bottom of the ocean floor? It's like, wow, that's not going to come back at all.
I don't have anything else to say except that this is a great movie. And it's on Prime. And you can watch it right now.
Yeah, close out your summer with Jaws like we did.
And maybe Jaws 2 as a double feature if you want to see some great outfits.
Yeah.
And potentially make up your own, like, horror story out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you guys have thoughts on Jaws, you want to share with us, you want to tell us about the episode, or just have thoughts on the podcast in general, you can email us at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com, and we will be happy to hear your comments and maybe read them in an upcoming episode.
Yeah, maybe you
want
to pitch Jaws 2 to us, your version.
Yes.
What you think happens to the Brodies after Jaws.
That would be, I would definitely like that. And if you send that, we will definitely read it in our next episode, which is
our Summer of Star Wars finale.
Da, da, da,
the final, da, 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 final da, 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 bookend to our summer, secondhand summer.
It's like the coda. Secondhand summer. Wow, that's a good
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so we'll be, wow, we should have called it secondhand summer. Summer of Star Wars or something.
Well, maybe like if we keep doing summer series, they can just be called like the secondhand summer. Like the secondhand summer series. Yeah. Secondhand summer 2020-21.
Yeah, wow. So we'll be basically wrapping up our final thoughts on Star Wars, giving you the ultimate Star Wars rankings.
the official, definitely true.
The only way that the Star Wars movies are allowed to be ranked, slightly controversial. It'll be a good time, so don't forget to
What if
tune
you put that in.
In
the title, like, Summer of Star Wars Finale, and then, like, in parentheses, slightly controversial.
Yikes, please don't come for my head. Don't unfollow me on Letterboxd, please.
Yeah, so we'll be, putting an end cap on both the summer and our Star Wars series, and I think it'll be a good time. Very chill, hopefully.
Yeah.
Where can they find us if they want to go on the old social medias?
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, just search up Secondhand Film Critics and we'll be there.
We will be there, and our personal accounts are somewhere in there too, so.
Wow.
You can
follow us.
Find it all.
Follow us.
Follow us. 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. That would be great. We haven't got a review in a while, so I think a review would be nice. You know, a good summer, end of summer present for us.
Boy, yeah.
Maybe pitch Jaws 2 in the review.
Yeah, sure.
Like, just put it in there. Yeah, well, that's really all I have. Anything else you want to share before we wrap this up?
No, that's all.
All right, well, thank you all for listening, and until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla.
And we're your secondhand film critics.
Critics.